7 past 9, good morning and welcome to the program. Why didn't Melbourne flood back in the last 41 seconds after Jeremy Howe kicked the goal that put the D's in front? That's the big question all fans and commentators were asking after St Kilda pinched the game at Etihad yesterday. A centre clearance by Jack Stephen into the Saints forward line resulted in a Montagna goal from the goal square. Why didn't Melbourne players get back in large numbers for that important centre bounce? Paul Roos's commentator once described a Richmond loss to the Gold Coast Suns as the worst 47 seconds of football in history when Carmichael Hunt kicked the winning goal. Here it is.
The worst 47 seconds. I say that in all seriousness. I'm not joking. I cannot believe that they could lose that game.
Now as coach, Roos might like to trump that statement with his own side, the worst 41 seconds in the game's history. I'm KB. That's my take.
We're down to 1 minute 20. Inside the 50. Howe! Jeremy Howe takes the mark. He will go back and line up and he needs to slot it. He's going to kick from 45 metres. It's a tough kick, but he has got it! He kicks the goal. Melbourne hit the front by 4 points. And we have got 41 seconds left on the clock.
Great take that time by Loney. Gives the ball across. Stevens continues to run. He kicks the ball down. Goes over the head of... Montagna kicks the goal! Montagna has kicked the goal for St Kilda. It went to the back of the pack. And Montagna has swooped. And St Kilda in front. There's 19 seconds left.
Geary gets it out. Clearing kick out to the wing. And Rebolt works it over. Rebolt work. There it is! Saints are home! Saints are home by 2 points at Etihad Stadium.
Well, I reckon we give a big tick to St Kilda and a big cross to Melbourne. 9-4-2-9-11-16. Your ticks and crosses from a huge weekend of sport. Patrick Smith is about to join us, always taking your calls. You can always set the sporting agenda watching your mind. Don't forget his famous Goose and Goose nominations as well today. Also, we talk some cricket with Sean Graff with Australia beating the Windies. Mark Allen with all the latest from the world of golf. Pete Ryan from AFL.com with all the latest injury report and also match review panel reports as well. Brett Phillips with the latest in the world of tennis and then the weekend Siren with Terry Wallace and Martin Blake. But coming up, Patrick Smith.
Any chance you just don't worry about the words and start with showing your intent with some actions? Now, the bottomless pit of idiocy behind those comments by both men is both chilling and disturbing. If you're harassed short of King hitting, go for it. Now, that is insane. So inappropriate. If we didn't have WADA, we wouldn't have sport, because nobody would believe one thing that they saw on a football field, a track field, a swimming pool, anything.
On Hungry for Sport, Patrick Smith.
Yes, your ticks and crosses from what's been a very interesting weekend of sport. G'day, Patrick.
Morning, Kevin. How are we going?
Good. Did you watch that game between St Kilda and Melbourne?
I did. Extraordinary, wasn't it?
Worst 41 seconds in the history of the game.
Well, it was interesting watching it, Kevin, because Melbourne get the goal and hit the front, go back to the centre, and then... Stevens, I think it is.
Yeah, Jack Stephen, yeah.
And you have a look, and what you're expecting is to see this mass of bodies, but it's not there.
No.
They didn't get back. And, I mean, you're so conditioned to thinking, well, they will have flooded back. There won't be a piece of grass that you can see. And it wasn't there.
Well, when St Kilda kicked the goal that put him back in front, when Montagna kicked that goal, it was like the charge of the Light Brigade by the St Kilda players. They just all ran back into defensive side of the ground, ready for the centre bounce.
Yeah.
They just charged back. There was just it was like the charge of the Light Brigade.
Yes.
Melbourne, now obviously, it was a very short quarter. Now, you could understand maybe the players not thinking it was as close to the siren as it was when they kicked that goal by Jeremy Howe. I think it was even Montagna told us after the game that when he kicked the goal, he still thought there might have been 1 or 2 minutes left in the game when there was only a matter of seconds. And I think Bernie Vince maybe made the comment as well, when Howe kicked the goal, they weren't aware of it. But that's up to Melbourne to actually get out there, because Howe was going back for a set shot. So they got the time clock in the box. They knew they were down under a minute. So how they never got that message out in some shape or form to the player saying, listen, if he kicks this, we're going to flood back in numbers because we've only got to defend for about 20 seconds.
Yeah, well, you'd argue, Kevin, wouldn't you, that there was a breakdown in communication that is sort of inherent in what Melbourne does from coach's box to players, given Oxley last week wasn't manned up. and then not to get that message out that you've got the lead, you've got seconds to defend, get everybody back, close it out, and we're home and hosed. But that's 2 weeks in a row. That never happened.
Worst 41 seconds in the history of the game, Pat.
Yeah.
Collingwood better than last year. Nathan Buckley feels at the same stage last year. Collingwood's better than they were back in 2014. Love to hear from Magpie fans there. They're getting very, very excited that maybe they're looking at top four now.
Well, there is a rider there, isn't it? They were 8-3 at this time last year, I think. So, and they didn't reach the final. So I think that that would be at the back of everybody's mind. But I think that they'd have to be a better side 12 months on than they were last year, and Buckley makes the point that they're a better club, they're better footballers, they're a better place to be, really, is what he's saying. So they're more mature, is a point that Buckley makes. So I think that they're better prepared than last year anyway.
Darren Crocker, after the game, the fill-in coach for North Melbourne, said he was very disappointed that Kangaroo fans did not show more respect for Adam Goods, because there was another heated reception for Goods, even this is after Jack Siebel called for respect from the North Melbourne fans?
Yeah, look, I think the more that gets got to a stage now where the more people say don't do it, the more people will do it. So
it's best for players not to bring it up like Jack Siebel brought it up last week?
Well, I don't think anybody's going to take any notice of them. And Kevin, one of the first callers we got last week after Jack Siebel made his comment was a North Melbourne supporter said, love Jack Siebel, I'm going to boo Goods, because it'll put him off his game. Well, it doesn't. We've discovered his best form has come since he's been booed as loudly as he has for this season. So I think you just give it away and hopefully it'll just drop off.
Now, I want to ask the fans, and I want to get their thoughts on this. I'll play some commentary. This is of Ted Richards, of course, in the big game, and he's taken a mark. And I'll play the audio from Channel 7. Also, I'll play some audio from SEN on Saturday night as well.
Opportunity for Wade, but he was caught behind two there.
I don't reckon. Did he duck there? I don't think he did. Oh, no.
Wow. What a mess here. And Thomas goals as a result.
Jeez. Because he played on.
So the umpire's saying he played on.
He hasn't even got back behind the mark.
That is just a mistake by the umpire there. Ted Richards hasn't gone off his line at all.
He hasn't even had a chance to get back behind the mark.
That is not play on at all, Richo.
Well, he went to give a handball when Jared Waite hadn't properly come off to stand the mark, and as a result, Waite was close enough to smother the handball and they kick a goal off the ground. As disappointed as Teddy is, I think that's fine. Just lack of awareness from him.
I'd like to know what the fans thought of that decision. I thought the umpire got it right, Patrick. I know that Channel 7 commentators thought they got it wrong because he didn't move off his mark. But he did get back behind his mark, because as he was going back and he was rolling his shoulders to try and, you know, get away as they often do, and then he wanted to give off the sneaky handball. But he actually missed his handball. He closed his fist. He went through with the handball, but because he just sort of got a bit of body pressure, he didn't make contact with the ball. So he was on his line, but his handball didn't make contact. So the ball hit the ground. I think the umpire had every right to call play on, because he wanted to play on, he attempted to play on, but he didn't make contact.
Well, if he's played on, Kevin, and he hasn't made contact, it's play on, and the goal stands, surely. But it's interesting that the commentators, looking to generate excitement, pick on umpiring decisions they're an easy target. And rather than just holding their breath for half a second, and commentary is dreadfully tough. It's way beyond anything, you know, that I could possibly do, or lots of people could do. It's terribly tough. But you've got to be able to just hold it for half a second just so you can process it a bit better than they did there.
I think the umpire certainly made the correct decision. I'd like to hear what the fans think on that. And also, I'd like to hear the fans give their thoughts on this one as well. This is Andrew Swallow going headfirst into Adam Goods, Channel 7.
In comes the support. Swallow's an in and under star. He goes headfirst at Goods.
No,
can't pay that. You cannot pay that. Worst decision of the year. It is just a horrendous decision, and it ruins a good game. What else is he supposed to do?
That's Luke Darcy saying it's the worst decision of the year. I think it was probably one of the best decisions of the year. So I'd like to hear from the fans because, as we know, they say it's been tweaked, but the rule's been in for at least 12 months. But they just warned people that this would take place because they hadn't been paying it in earlier games, that if you want to drive with your head and continue to drive with your head and you don't handball it and you don't kick it and you're tackled in a reasonable manner, as Good's tackled Swallow, and if you don't release the ball, you will be pinged.
Yes, he made no attempt to move the ball on, Kevin. That was his problem. If he tried to get rid of the ball or looked...
Well, he has to handball and he has to kick it because he's had prior opportunities.
That's right. If he had been seen to be trying to do either of those things...
And making contact.
Yeah, I think that that's okay. But Luke Darcy, was he on the Laws of the Game Committee at any stage?
He's been on several committees. Look, maybe he was, but I'm not quite certain. Mm. But he's certainly been on some committees. But I can't be certain of that now.
Right.
Certainly, he's been on All Australians and things like that. So I might get a bit confused.
Hasn't Wayne Campbell supported the umpire on that since? I think Wayne Campbell...
Well, of course he would have supported the umpire.
Said the umpire got it right.
I mean, I'll try and get some audio up or get some thoughts from Wayne Campbell. But, I mean, to me, that was so obvious because they've been talking about driving your head and you continue to put your head down and drive it into an opponent. So you're responsible for initiating the contact. All the opponent has to do is wrap you up, which Goods did. He just put his arms virtually around his trunk. And he looked at the umpire as he was driven back saying, okay, I reckon this is holding the ball.
Yes.
I don't think it was the worst thing
Swallow did, really, when you think about it. I mean, if the umpire hadn't battering ram, they may be in Brunswick by now, those two. It was very odd.
Well, Luke said it was the worst decision of the season. I think it was, it was the right decision, so it's got to be one of the best decisions of the season. What do you think as fans? 9429116. We'll take a break. We'll come back. We'll take your ticks and crosses from what's been a big weekend in sport.
I don't know if we're playing better footy, but I think we are a more mature group. We're a better team and we're a better club than we were 12 months ago, and I think we're just developing, you know, week on week. The environment around the place is really... really solid. You know, we're not getting carried away one way or the other. If we have a loss, it's not the end of the world. If we have a win, we're not the champions that everyone might tell us that we are. It's somewhere in between always. And I think we're maintaining our composure well as an organisation, and that's going to stand us in good stead.
There's Nathan Buckley talking about the Mighty Pies. If you're back for Collingwood, give us a buzz. Just how confident are you that maybe now Collingwood can make finals, maybe even top four? Let's go to our callers, ticks and crosses from a big weekend. Johnny's in Laverton. G'day, John.
G'day, KB. How are you?
Good. Thanks for joining us along with Patrick.
Yeah, tick to Travis Cloak. 12 goals in 2 weeks, you know, 12-2. Good turnaround.
My word it is, 12 goals, two. He kicked seven straight against Melbourne. And as you say, 5-2 on the weekend.
Helped his confidence, though, didn't it, Kevin, on the weekend when the two defenders went down. It was helpful to...
Yeah, Davis went off and Patful's gone off. But I mean, he's still got to actually kick straight.
Oh, no, yeah. No, what I'm just saying that was perfect timing for him to build on the seven was that he got a slightly easier task. I think Nick Haynes was on him, I think, in the end, from memory. So I think he got a slightly easier task, but it's tremendous for his confidence to have happened.
Nathan Buckley is not quite certain whether Travis is 100% at the moment.
Travis' form's been excellent. I reckon he's operated about 70% health and fitness in the last 2 weeks. He's been carrying a lurgy, crook as a dog, and done really well to get up. So his performances are more meritorious because of that. He's a more mature player than he's been. He's great. He's leading really strongly. And... yeah, it's just great to see his development. I think he's starting to explore parts of his football life that he hasn't before. He's more connected to the footy club than he ever has been, and you know, his performances are reflecting that.
Do you think the fans should know whether he's only playing at 70% because he's got a dreaded lurgy?
Probably not, no, because that would give information to the opposition and they might try something different.
John's on the road. G'day, John.
Good morning, Kevin.
G'day, Johnny. Did you boo Adam Goods on the weekend?
I was listening to you and Patrick this morning talking about Adam Goods. When you and Patrick are going to meet, he's a protective species. Doesn't matter what he does, he's always a protective because he's Aboriginal. And what I saw him doing Saturday night, before I never used to boo anyone, And then every time I see him play, I will always boo him. Because what he done to Jackie Sibbel, he got Jackie Sibbel thrown right against the boundary into the fence with the ball, no one here, no free kick against good. And then your comment about Andrew Squalor. Andrew Squalor, he had his head pinned between Adam Good's legs, and that he would have got rid of the ball. If he would have got rid of the ball, he couldn't throw the ball out. He has to drop it. And once you drop it, it's automatically free kick. So
he can handball, John. He can handball.
Ball. You know, sometimes you come out with some comment, you and Patrick, I just can't believe you sometimes.
He can handball it, John.
John, you'll boo every player that pushes another opponent into the fence. Is that correct? You'll boo Robert Harvey for... Boomer Harvey, sorry, for knocking the ball out of the hands of
Pritis
and claiming a 50 metre. You'll boo that next time, won't you? Because that's cheating.
Well,
you have to, John. If you're going to be consistent, you have to boo. You have to boo that, John, to be consistent.
Well, John certainly didn't take on board what Jack Siebel said as well, and Darren Crocker was disappointed that the North Melbourne fans booed on the weekend. But what you're saying, Pat, is that's not going to stop fans from booing if you get, you know, players or coaches coming out asking you not to boo. In fact, it may work in the other direction.
Don't tell us what to do, baby. We'll boo if we want.
Kevin's in Port Melbourne. G'day, Kev.
G'day, KB. How are you?
Good, Kev. You want to talk about Teddy Richards?
Yes, well, listen, mate, as you know, I'm a Swan supporter, and the umpire made the right decision. Look, Richards took the mark. He turned around to handball to Lewis Jetta, who was running behind him. The ball spilled, so naturally it's play on. The umpire made the correct bloody decision. So, you know, if any Swan supporter or anybody out there, or even Ted Richards, says it was a wrong decision, have a bloody good look and see. He deliberately did go to handball onto Lewis Jetta and played on.
No doubt about that in my mind, Kev.
And the second point, the Andrew Swallow one, that was the correct decision as well because he made no attempt to handball it, like you said before. He just put his head in, kept pushing. He could have handballed because he's got two arms still free. One may have been around the leg, but he could have taken that off and handballed, not drop it or not, you know, hang on to it. So the right decision, those two umpiring decisions were correct.
Well, I reckon you've nailed it, Kev. I reckon you've nailed it with ticks and crosses there, and that's a big tick for the umpires. Arthur's in Doncaster. G'day, Arthur. Agree or disagree?
Well, I disagree on the Swallow one. Basically, if you look at it, he bent down and picked up the ball, and Goods just wrapped his knees around his head. Now, Goods waited for Swallow to pick up the ball. Under the new rules, are you allowed to bend down and pick up the ball, or is that considered leading with the head?
No, you're allowed to bend down and pick up the ball, but once you pick up the ball, if it's deemed that you then keep your head down and you drive your head forward, then it's up to you. You're going to be responsible to either handballing or kicking the ball if, in fact, you're tackled in a fair manner.
Pick up the ball and you wrap your legs around my head, what am I supposed to do?
Well, I think you said before there, Arthur, that Goods waited for him because obviously when someone's bending down picking up the ball, you've got to be very careful these days going in and making head contact. So otherwise you get reported for that. Certainly there's a free kick. So, you know, you see a lot of players now, I think it's fair to say, Patrick, they are very careful about not crashing to the player who's bending over.
Well, that's what we want them to do, Kevin.
And so he stands his ground. So when that player picks up the ball, if he then wants to continue on, Arthur, you know, with that forward motion, which he did, in my opinion, then he's got to actually handball it or kick it. Otherwise, he's going to be given a free kick against him. Running probably around about 50% at the moment on that particular decision. We'll take a break. We'll come back. Sports Central, we'll take more of your calls along with Patrick Smith.
It's probably as emotional as I've been, I reckon, after the game. Because, well, not after the game, certainly when Joey scored. You know, we knew how long there was to go. There wasn't long. I think it was the first time for the game. Pretty close to it that the Doomers had hit the front. And there is a real tendency, I reckon, for our guys, and rightfully so, with a minute to go, to think that, you know, that one's probably got away from us. But to their credit, they fight. I thought they were terrific tonight in that area.
Alan Richardson, you've got to see that video. Have you seen that video of Alan Richardson? He got
very pleased, I thought, Kevin.
very, very excited. They're very emotional. Wow. I thought he was going to explode.
Yes, well, he knows how effectively they stole the match. Mm. I mean, they should never have won it from the position Melbourne got itself, but he stole it, and boy, I'd be excited as that too.
Yes, just when you think you've lost the game, all of a sudden you've won the
Bingo.
Game again.
Yeah.
Jesse Hogan is an absolute young star for Melbourne, booted
5 goals.
5 goals, so... Yep. He's the future that they're going to build that side around. David is in North Dandenong. G'day, Dave. Picks and crosses.
Yeah, first cross after being after Jack Siebel begging them not to boo Goods. For the Bogan fans, not all the North Melbourne fans, but for the Bogan fans that booed, that was a disgrace. The second thing, I thought Goods' free kick was the most blatant free kick of the weekend. And if they're going to argue about, we're going to argue about that. You can imagine what the rest of the year is going to be like on a Monday morning arguing about those free kicks.
Okay, the most blatant thing, free kick, yep.
And the third thing, I think you're being unduly harsh on Ruse. That was the shortest quarter ever. I don't think they had time either. Even St Kilda didn't have time to get it out quick enough. But anyway, what the bigger problem with Melbourne was how they just allowed St Kilda to have half a dozen players across the between centre half forward and the centre by themselves, just kicking it back in. The Melbourne backman for the whole 23 or the 25 minutes of that quarter, they were just handballing all the time because there's nobody to kick it to. I don't know how they kept St Kilda out for as long as they did.
No, that's a good point. I think they had 17 entries inside 50. I think Melbourne might have had 4 or 5 for the quarter. But there was a period of time, which absolutely spot on, David. Patrick, for those who didn't see the game, St Kilda had the ball inside 50 virtually for the entire last quarter.
Absolutely.
And then outside of 50, you had this wall of players. And there was no Melbourne players there just waiting for the ball to come back out. And at one stage, Terry Wallace actually said, they'll have to run the ball all the way down the ground handballing to each other because they can't kick it because there was no one there. Yes, good points made by David. Harry's in Moonee Ponds. G'day, Harry.
G'day, Kev.
G'day, Harry.
Now, let's look at the perspective. It was a great game by Melbourne. They had a lot of young players in yesterday. They bought off St Kilda. Yes, in the last quarter, the inexperience came into those 5 players that inexperience. We've got 5 or 6 players could walk in our side. No one looks at that. However, the team that we had, it was a great game. The only thing is they'll learn by this, and understandably, the coaching staff. In those last seconds, I was there, and your good friend who's on tomorrow was there behind me.
Dr. Turf?
Yes, yes. And we discussed it, and we felt that we can't remember when Melbourne last won at the... at the Docklands. So, in saying that, we had a hoodoo, but in those last seconds, someone turned around and said to me, it was 41 seconds left. Now, in the last quarter, as the last caller just said, Melbourne had most of their players in the back line stopping St Kilda from kicking goals like that. Why didn't the coaching staff... I saw Jack Watts on the wing thinking he had to go on the forward side of the play towards our goal rather than go behind the play. And this is the whole confusing thing. All the boys were totally mesmerised and didn't know what was going on. Now, is that a coaching situation there? I think so. And I'm not happy that our man last week said that there's a mental problem. I think there's a bit of a mental problem in the coaching box myself.
Well, after the communication problem.
Well, after the game, Patrick, you know, we were discussing, like other people were discussing it, you probably can't absolutely blame the players because it was a short quarter. And therefore, they probably felt that, you know, there was still maybe 2 or 3 minutes to go even. But the coaching box has the time clock in there. And when he went back to have that shot at goal, they would have known that, look, if he kicks this goal, you'd be sending people out before he's even had a shot for goal saying, look, if he misses this goal, you know, set up for the kick in. But if he kicks this goal, we're going to flood back in numbers because there's only 20 seconds to go. You could tell them anything, 20 seconds, 10 seconds to go. All you want to do is tell them that there's only a few seconds left in the game. But that didn't seem to happen. So most people are not blaming Harry, the players, because thinking, well, maybe there's still a long time to go in the quarter. But they are blaming the coaching box to say, well, he was having a set shot, so there was at least, you got 30 seconds for him to take the set shot. First of all, he took the mark, all that sort of stuff. Plenty of time, most people felt, to get the message out there that, hey, this is a very, very short quarter. In fact, the siren's got to go in 40 seconds' time.
Yeah, there was vision right at the end, Kevin, after they got the goal. After Melbourne got the goal, sorry, of Paul Ruse waving his arm as to say, get back, get them back, get them back.
Why didn't they get back?
That's the communication breakdown that I'm talking about that's happened twice now.
Okay, this is what Paul Roos has to say after the game.
We couldn't get it done, like putting a number behind the ball or two numbers or three numbers behind the ball. So obviously, as a coach, take responsibility. If you can't get it done, you can't get it done. And, you know, normally in those situations, that's what would happen.
So a lot of people are suggesting that on Twitter and that Paul's waving his arms and on the phone as well, saying, get back, get back. So something happened. It was pretty poor by Melbourne that they couldn't get back. Paul famously said, you know, the worst 47 seconds in Richmond's history.
Yeah.
In the game's history. In the game's history. That was when Trent Cotchin, of course, was standing on the sidelines. They couldn't get him on the ground. Remember that?
Yep.
So I think Paul's own side now has taken the cake for the worst 41 seconds in the history of the game.
Yes, I think you're absolutely right, Kevin.
Snap up.
But, I mean, having called your players deaf the week before, you probably couldn't come out the next week and say they can't count. So he had to have a more moderate response.
I'd like to ask the fans also on the weekend, Lee Matthews said the third man up. He doesn't like that in AFL football. He doesn't believe that we should be allowing the third man up. This is mainly coming out of the game. I think he made his comments after the Geelong Port Adelaide game with Blitzavs and Stanley.
But does he give a reason?
I'm not quite certain whether the reason's any more than the fact that he doesn't believe it's good for the game that, you know, you got the two ruckmen going for the ball and the third man comes up over the top. I don't think there's any other reason other than that. I could be wrong, but I don't think he likes the look of it.
Right.
Look, I don't mind the third man up myself. I mean, obviously, at the centre bounce, we know who the ruckman is at the centre bounce, but I think around the ground, once the umpire, first of all, the umpire ball ups wants to know who's actually going up so he can come out so the players know that. But if someone wants to jump up as the third man around the ground, I think that's just tactics. I mean, I watched on the weekend, Sandilands have 70 hit-outs on the weekend against the Gold Coast Suns. I mean, he was just unstoppable. So at some stage, you've got to try something, don't you, as a tactic to try and, you know, get someone else to jump up and maybe, like, taking a high mark, coming over the top and punching the ball, trying to do something.
Well, for aesthetics, you've got more chance of clearing the players around the ball if the third man comes up and punches. He can clear it. Mm.
Well, I'd like to get some thoughts on that. Look, I personally don't mind the third man going up at boundary throw-ins or ball-ups, but Lee doesn't like it. Give us your thoughts, 9429 1116. We'll come back with your calls. Snapper's going to be the first cab off the rank, and also Patrick's famous Goose and Goose of the Week, so you may have some early nominations.
It's now time for Patrick Smith's Goose.
So I'm happy now at this moment.
And Goose of the Week on 1116 SEN.
Yes, Patrick's famous awards, Goose and Goose of the Week. Plenty of nominations on Twitter.
Absolutely, Kevin. Thanks for everybody for tweeting. Where would you like to go, Kevin?
I'd like to start with the Goose first, something good.
Goose. There's Steve Smith, 199 and 54 not out, and finishes that series with the series average of 145, a test average of 56, nine centuries. He's in magnificent form. Mitchell Stark. He was Kevin named player of the match, a player of the series. Nathan Lyon is our leading off spinner, 146. A lot of praise for Jesse Hogan. A lot of people thought Nick Riewoldt was very brave to play after such an emotional week and stay on with a sore ankle. But I've given it to Adam Scott, Kevin.
You have not.
On the grounds that he had the courage to change caddies.
Steve Williams.
Steve Williams. Yes. I just think that's...
Golfers funny. Have been banned from this segment, Pat.
Well, I think he's right up there, Kevin. But I guess I'm going to have to give it to Matty Dellavedova for his outstanding performances with Cleveland. And, of course, he goes round in a critical game
today,
this morning. So
game three, gets you for that game three heroic.
Yes, we can't go past Dellavedova, Kevin. For Goose, James Hurd was thrown up because he didn't take a ruckman to tackle Nick Natanui. People are very unhappy with Foxtel not showing the women's golf, Kevin.
Yes, no, I was trying. Well, yeah, I was
not showing it live.
Going to say I recorded segments of it,
and then there was no footy free to air. That got a lot of complaints. And yeah, somebody's not happy with the new Wallabies jersey for the World Cup. But I had to give it to Paul Roos and Melbourne for the worst 41 seconds in the history of football.
Okay, so Paul Roos gets it for the first 41 seconds in the history of football as the goose of the week. And, well, a lot of people are suggesting that he was maybe not the goose because he was yelling and screaming in the coaching box, getting his message down for someone else to actually get his message out there.
Yep. But well, that's his job, to ensure after the week before, when he couldn't get anybody to understand or hear or listen or whatever, to man up on the extra man that Collingwood were running. Kevin, I would have thought that their lines of communication, Kevin, would have been spectacular, but they weren't. So that in itself is goose. So Paul Roos and the players.
Okay, I've just been told off the message bank. The Baldy Bridge is closed outbound. Kevin, it's a car park, so please spread the word. So it's the Baldy Bridge closed outbound. It's a car park. Snapper is in Port Phillip Bay. G'day, Snapper.
Good morning, gentlemen. How are we going?
Good, Snap.
That's good. I've got 2 points, Carlton. Now, the first point is we've got Port this week, then Gold Coast, then Bulldogs, then Richmond, all in Melbourne. Now, if Carlton managed to win 3 or 4 of those games, what does that mean for John Barker as a coach of Carlton for next season or the next 3-4 seasons to, at Carlton? Will he?
Well, it doesn't hurt his chances. If he was to win 3 out of those 4 games, I don't know whether it gets him the job, Snapper, but it certainly doesn't harm his chances.
No. It keeps him on the short list, but yeah. I don't think it does anything more than that.
So what are you suggesting, Snapper? Are you putting up your hand that John Barker is the man to coach Carlton?
I'm not going to put my hand up just yet. We're not going to make, like Brett Radden, he got the job automatically. Carlton didn't go for a coaching, a panel where they selected. That's what I mean. Will he automatically get the job, or will they still go through that process?
No, and process. They've told us they're going through, I think for the first time ever, I think someone said, Carlton usually just go out and appoint someone.
Yes.
They don't go through a process or get a lot of nominations coming in for the job. They generally, would sack a coach and then say, well, that coach is sacked, Brett Ratton is sacked, Dennis Pagan is our coach.
Yes, that's right.
And the same thing, with Ratton is sacked or Mick Malthouse is our coach.
Yeah. I think if he has a good finish, it puts him on the shortlist.
Yeah.
See, I reckon it's very easy for the replacement coach to try something very different. I reckon Malthouse was trying to train a club how to win a premiership 5 years down the track. Now, Barker can come in and say, well, we'll do all these things and we'll, put more fun into it and we'll do these and we'll take more risks. Whether that is ever going to win them a grand final, a premiership, is another thing. But I think Malthouse was trying to just build into them a system that he knows will get you into the finals.
Your second point, Snapper, you wanted to talk about father and son picks?
Yeah, second point. Now, Carlton, obviously, this draft period coming up at the end of the season, we've got Silvani's son, Craig Bradley's son, Dean Rice's son. Now, Dean Rice's son can select St Kilda, or St Kilda can put a bid in. Now, the question I've got is, what do Carlton have to offer up to get those three kids? Let's say, for instance, hypothetically, Carlton want Bradley's son and Silvani's son, but don't want Dean Rice's. So that's 2 father and sons out of 3. What do Carlton have to offer up? There was a question that my grandfather raised yesterday, and we weren't quite sure, what is the process that Carlton have to do to get Bradley's son and Silvani and Dean Rice's son? So 3 father and son, what do they have to do to get those 3 kids at Carlton next season?
Well, my understanding is, of course, we've got a new process with
point
father and
system,
sons.
Kevin.
We've got a point system. So the first draft pick is worth, I think it's 3,000 points, and all those draft picks have got a certain number of points behind them. So if someone offers up, pick 3, that's worth a certain number of points, and if you want to match that, then you've got to add up the same number of points. Now, sometimes you might be able to do it with 2 draft picks, you might be able to do it with 3 draft picks, But you've got to match those number of points rather than in the past where you just matched it with your first round or second round draft pick.
And I think it nearly rules out any club taking two father and sons in one draft.
Can be very, very difficult because at the moment I don't think we've got, you can't on-trade your picks and all that sort of stuff at the moment. There's plenty of talk about that.
You simply run out of points.
You just run out of points.
Yeah.
So I noticed on the weekend, I think it's Jack Silvani, Stephen Silvani's son, booted, I think it was 5 or 6 goals playing for Victoria. So that's a big decision for Stephen Silvani and Carlton. We'll take a break. We'll come back with more of your calls. Mickey has joined us along with Patrick Smith in South Belgrave. G'day, Mick.
Hey, boys. How are you?
Good, thanks.
Geelong supporter, so 2 ticks and a cross. First tick, obviously, the Cats. Super win, we're back.
Yep, back.
You're in decline, aren't you?
I don't know about that. The next 5 weeks, probably tell you we won't be. Yeah. Second thing is we went over to Adelaide and it is absolutely fantastic. You won't get a better place to watch football. But the third tick is $13.50 for a can of scotch. That is steep.
$13.50
for a can of scotch. He said.
Yeah.
Well, Gil will look after that.
Nothing's impossible. We'll just drop a line to Gil and that will be fixed by next week.
Patrick, thanks for that. We'll catch you tomorrow.
Sure will.
Coming up, Sean Graff is about to join us, Victorian cricket manager, and Mark Allen, of course, the people's champion. Don't forget, Pete Ryan and Weekend Siren with Terry Wallace and Martin Blake.